Welcome to episode 3 of the Edisto TV podcast, produced by Edisto TV, connecting the Blackwater region. Here are our hosts, Hugo and Tom.
Thank you, Marge, and welcome everybody back to another edition of the Edisto TV podcast. This is our third weekly podcast, becoming a regular habit, I guess. Coming up this week, we have a number of things. We're going to be talking about the developing plans for Blackwater, just a couple of weeks away now on Saturday, June the 21st. And Tom, I know you're all loaded up with some information about that we're going to be talking about later.
Yes, indeed.
All right. We're also going to be teasing a conversation you'll be having with Joel from Ubiquity about the Edisto TV technology initiative. We'll be recording that this week, and that will be on next week's episode. This week, later on today, we're going to be talking to one of our new friends from the Edisto Concerns Facebook page, I think is how Kim found us. He's known online as Ditch Weasel and does a bunch of diving in the Edisto for megalodon teeth and other fossils. Tom, tell us a bit about that.
Well, yeah, I just was looking at some videos online and found this guy that had been doing a lot of diving in the Edisto, and some of the videos he has, underwater videos of him finding teeth and various other things. It's quite interesting.
All right, we'll look forward to that conversation. That will be in this week's episode, getting recorded later today. Also, we're going to be talking a bit about some new agricultural water withdrawal registrations in the Edisto Basin. We were notified of those by DHEC a few days ago. Going to look into that a bit. And we're trying to add some regular weekly features. And one of the features we think we're going to be working on is something about the history of the Edisto River Basin. There's all sorts of things that have happened here through the years. I mean, in 1540, De Soto, the Spanish conquistador, was on the banks of the Edisto. John Bachman and John James Audubon did a lot of the early bird collecting in Carolina along the Edisto. All sorts of history with the logging industry and the naval stores industry. So we're going to try to do a weekly feature on history along the Edisto. And so that will be coming up as well. So here we go. Edisto TV Podcast Episode 3. Back with more in just a moment.
For more information and archive podcasts, visit us at edisto.tv.
This is the Edisto TV podcast, and the first thing we're going to talk about this week is the first annual Blackwater Festival, celebration, whatever you want to call it. I just call it Blackwater, out at Aiken State Park on June the 21st. That's a couple of Saturdays away, and starts at 9 a.m. when the park opens, and there will be events throughout the day. The park does close at dark. Of course, if you're interested in camping, need to go ahead and get in touch with the park and reserve yourself a campsite, and there will be opportunities, I guess, to recreate beyond the times when the park is actually open if you're camped out there. And Tom, I know we got some information from Tim Rogers with the Friends of the Edisto. Run through some of the items that Tim is saying that we're going to be seeing out there.
Well, got the hours is 9 to 5, so definitely try to get out there early and get on the water. The canoe trail will be open, so that's a really nice, like I said, 45 minutes to an hour paddle. There are a handful of people, more advanced, skilled paddlers that are going to try to make the paddle all the way down to Cadle Bridge, which is probably more like a 6 or 7 hour trip. But we'll have a barbecue cooking out there, and we got a band playing. We're going to have some guided nature walks. The folks from Savannah River Ecology Lab will be out there with some amphibian reptile exhibits, so definitely bring the kids and see some snakes and various other critters. Also, we'll have some folks talking about water quality and the ecology of the river. And the park itself is just a great place to visit. You know, there's swimming in the lake there. You can get in the river. A lot going on. I plan to bring the family. I think we got several families that are planning on camping out the night before. So definitely get your campsites right away.
All right. And if you are interested in boating, If you're going to rent a boat from the state park, that's going to be on a first-come, first-served basis. They do have, I think, 8 or 10 canoes and maybe 6 or 8 kayaks for rent. If you want to bring your own boats, you can do that. Certainly the state park canoe trail there, where you put in and take off within the boundary of the state park. Like you said, 45 minutes an hour, it's a nice trip. Even though it's right there in the state park, you really do get a feel for what the river's like and how by yourself you can be there in the nature offerings of the park. If you want to rent a state park boat, you probably need to go ahead and get in touch with them and reserve one. Otherwise, they will be first come, first serve as they get turned around from the bottom back up to the top during the day. But we would hope to see a bunch of people taking advantage of that. If you have boats of your own, by all means, bring them. You need to have your appropriate personal flotation device. You need to have your paddle. You need to have the skills to get out and have the experience safely. If you want to have a first-time paddling experience, get in touch with us. We'll try to hook you up with somebody who might be able to give you a little information and help you out getting down. But we want to see people come out, have fun in the river, but we want to see everybody to do that safely. As far as music goes, we have one band which is confirmed now. That's Prettier Than Matt. If you were with us for Stewardship Day down in Caledon State Park, you saw them working on a few more folks. We don't want to work Prettier Than Matt to death with a 9-hour schedule or whatever it is that would mean for them. So hopefully several different musical offerings, and we'll have more information about that as it comes together. Tom, anything else you want to say about Blackwater?
Nope, just come on out.
Okay, we look forward to seeing everybody there, and since Tom says he's camping, look for him in the campground the night before. We'll be back with more on the Edisto TV podcast right after this.
This is Tom from the Edisto TV podcast, and I just want to put in a word for Tyler Brothers. They've been serving the Blackwater region for over 100 years. They have a lawn and garden center with plenty of steel and Husky chainsaws, weed trimmers, blowers, plenty of Husqvarna mowers, and if you've got a lot of grass to cut, check out those Husqvarna zero-turn mowers. They have 3 or 4 different models to choose from. Check them out at tylerbrothers.net, or if you're on Facebook, you definitely want to follow them and get the latest deals from them. You can find them at facebook.com/Tyler Bros or search for Tyler Brothers, and you'll find Tyler Brothers for Carhartt clothing. They are the place for guns and ammo, your Carhartt work clothes. They've got camo from Carhartt and Drake and many more. Work boots from Georgia Boot, Rocky, Red Wing, Justin, Wolverine, and many more. They are the place for your safety shoes, your snake boots, your camo, whatever else you need when you are out in the swamp. Tyler Brothers, since 1904, it's the place for you to be on a Saturday afternoon. They're open 8 to 6, 6 days a week. Closed on Sunday. Stay away from the superstores and visit Tyler Brothers in Wagner.
Welcome back. Now, here are Hugo and Tom.
And we're back with the Edisto TV podcast. Tom, I think it's time for our weekly update on the technology initiative. I know we teased a conversation we're going to try to have with Joel from Ubiquity coming up in the next week or two. But for now, can you tell me a little bit? I think we're going to an event on Wednesday of this week, are we not?
Yes, we're going to the Connections event up in Columbia at the ITology building. And the Connect SC group is one of the sponsors there. And they've got a breakfast where they're going to be talking a little more specifically about some of the work going on. Also, we have some forms that we're filling out for some grants. Apparently there's quite a bit of grant money out there for trying to connect these rural areas, and so we're trying to get engaged with the right people to get these grants going and basically provide some funding to get things started for us. So we also have had several people inquire about investments, people that want to help build some towers. So if you have any interest in investing your money in a tower, it could be a profitable venture. By all means, contact us through the edisto.tv. There's a button there that says, I'm interested in investing. Just tell us your name and number, and we'll give you a holler.
Yeah, and something I did want to mention when you were saying that we were getting contacted by people, a lot of what we're hoping to do here is to meet needs that people have that they're not getting filled right now. So definitely, if you have an interest in high-speed internet in your area, and you're not really sure if what we're talking about with Edisto TV fits with the need that you've identified for yourself, get in touch with us. Let's talk, because as this thing takes shape, we'd like to find a way to accommodate the maximum number of users as efficiently as we can, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. We want to, you know, there's certain efficiency to doing it locally and kind of building out organically from one place. But at the same time, if there's a certain need in a certain area, we can get there quicker. We'll try to meet where the needs are. But right now we're looking at trying to set up a prototype or in the Wagner area. We hope to have something up in the next couple of months, and we'll have a much better feel as far as the exact cost, the kind of the rate of return on your investment if you do put up a tower, and you know, just the quality and everything. I mean, everything we've seen to this point looks good, but we're going to test it ourselves and make sure we got a good system in place before we try to roll it out to the whole basin.
All right. And as you said a moment ago, we are going to be over at the Connect SC event this week, and we will be reporting back on that in next week's episode of the Edisto TV podcast.
This is the Edisto TV podcast, connecting the Blackwater region.
Moving along, there has been a development that we were informed of as a courtesy by our friends at DHEC, and that is there are now apparently two new agricultural water withdrawal registrations that have been granted in the Edisto River Basin. And Tom, I think that you have taken a look at these things and have done a little map work and so forth. Tell us basically what these two new registrations look like. Where are they? What are they? What do you know?
Okay. The first is a group called Pebble Creek Enterprises, and that is they're going to be pulling water from Giddy Swamp Creek, which is off the North Edisto. They're going to be pulling 4 million gallons a month. And Giddy Swamp Creek is, if you're familiar with the area between Pelion and Wagner, there's a Edisto Lake. Edisto Lake is on Giddy Swamp Creek. And so it's below Edisto Lake. There's a couple of big farms down there when I look on Google Earth, but I'm not exactly sure which one is Pebble Creek. But that's the one, and that's 4 million gallons per month.
Right, and that is just downstream, actually, from where I live, as you said, sort of there between Pelion and Wagner, so on the North Fork upstream of Orangeburg.
Exactly. And then the other one is River Bluff Sod Farm, which is in Orangeburg County, Springfield area, and they're looking to pull 13 million gallons per month out of Rocky Swamp Creek, which is a tributary to the South Edisto, which is pretty much, I think you'd say, probably below, let's say, in the Springfield area.
Right. And, you know, we are stakeholders in all of this. We are interested in this, but we are by no means experts on water withdrawal or anything. I want to make that clear. But this one in particular, this River Bluff Sod Farm registration, what the notice we got says is the South Carolina Department of Health and Environmental Control is providing this courtesy notice regarding a new surface water withdrawal registration for the Edisto River Basin. River Bluff Sod Farm will withdraw surface water from Rocky Swamp Creek, a tributary of the South Edisto River in Orangeburg County, for the purpose of irrigating cropland. The registration application specifies the maximum anticipated volume of water needed in any single month as 13 million gallons per month, and the safe yield for the withdrawal is calculated to be 395.4 million gallons a month. The registered withdrawal of 13 million gallons a month is well within the safe yield at the withdrawal point. Therefore, the registration was issued in accordance with the surface water withdrawal, permitting, use, and reporting regulation, and this notice has been provided for information only by our friends at DHEC. Now, the part of that actually that I find most interesting is the 13 million gallons sounds like it really is safe to take 13 million gallons a month from that. But I'm interested that they have this 395.4 million gallon a month safe yield amount. And I would love once again to understand how they're doing that, considering that there is no stream gauging where they're pulling the water out. And as part of that conversation, which we're going to be having on an ongoing basis, I am going to go back and I'm going to put together some of the comments Dr. John Bass made for us when the issue with Walther Farms first came up on how this stuff is calculated by our friends who are doing the safe yield analysis. And so we will be inserting that here. Dr. John Bass talking about the science, or the methodology at least, which underpins these safe yield calculations.
I'm John Bass, and I live in Kitchens Mill, and we have land that adjoins the South Edisto River, and my background is in science, and I've been in different governmental agencies and private industry, and retired from the military, and also from the educational government area. But just a local person that's been blessed with a lot of things that the good Lord gives us that are free. And the South Edisto River is one of those blessings, where it's just a long, free-flowing blackwater river that has been preserved for hundreds of years. And as stewards, we need to continue to allow all people to enjoy the river, but we have to make sure that we use it properly so it doesn't deplete itself.
All right. Now, a lot of what we're seeing in the sort of Edisto Concerns page on Facebook and so forth is people who are very worked up about this issue but may not actually understand the issue. How would you explain this to somebody who is a stakeholder, has an interest, but doesn't really understand quite what the issues are?
Well, the main issue to me is the way you go about making sure that your rivers stay in good preservation and being allowed to have free flow that it normally has. This would include all legislators in South Carolina to look up and listen, because they also have rivers in their districts and streams. And if the precedent that is set currently in the South Edisto River by the current statute, the main thing is the rules and regulations typically do a little more in other areas than just safe yield determination. Now, safe yield determination means that it's a permissible flow of the river for a continuation of what its normality is, and that is above that in the safe yield, you can safely do what they call surface withdrawal, surface water withdrawal. Most studies show that if that's all you use in your rule and regulation, that many times you run into trouble down the road after allowing an amount of surface water withdrawal to occur, such as you have to take into account your recreational use of the river. You have to take into account the wetlands that surround the river. You have to take into account the flora and the fauna and the distribution that's in those wetlands and the ecosystem of the river. You have to take into account the fish and the invertebrates that are directly in the river, and also the sedimentation that's in the bottom of the river. What kind of effect changes does that have? And the river itself is not the same level all the way down as far as depth. Many times you will find in the South Edisto River where it'll be 8 feet in one spot, and you go down less than half a mile and you may be 2 or 3 feet. So we have a bottom issue, and you have to be on constant alert about the flow rate. And the flow rate just means how much water is passing a given point within a minute, or in many times it's cubic feet per second. And the USGS, or United States Geological Survey, they do this by satellite, and we can actually go to 2 points along the South Edisto River, Mineta and Denmark, and we can pull those up on the internet, and we can see what the flow rate is in any given day. So anytime you have rules and regulations that don't take into account the intake point and what that flow rate is going to be, either above or below or at the intake, the data is not going to be there to give us a true picture of what can or could be happening to our ecosystem and the flow of the river. So in general terms, what it says is the flow of the river is normally, let's say, at 480,000 gallons per minute. then what Safe Yield says is you can extract so much of that out and not hurt the river itself. If you only use Safe Yield, we don't know about the situation I just mentioned about how the depth of the bottom rises and falls, and also about obstacles that fall into the river just by natural being. Tree limbs, trees, and other things like that, changing the channel of the river.
For more information and archived podcasts, visit us at edisto.tv.
The Edisto TV podcast is back, and up next, we've got Tom Slyker and myself talking by Skype with Kim, a.k.a. Ditch Weasel, about hunting for fossils in the Edisto River.
Hey, Tom and Hugo.
Well, Kim, I wonder if you could just tell us a little bit about what you do. I saw the website.
It's blackriverfossils.org, and on there, my name is Ditch Weasel, or DW. You can also go to youtube.com/blackriverfossils or facebook.com/blackriverfossils and get a hold of me that way, or, you know, be able to talk to other people that frequent those places. It started off being just me because I was a fossil hunter, and I'm like back in the late 90s putting pictures of my shark teeth that I'm finding up on the internet, and I ended up meeting a lot of people that way. And then, you know, you saw a whole bunch of different users and members on there, and so over the years they came along and started adding their stuff too. And then when Facebook and YouTube came out, we kind of started moving in that direction and sharing there because there was a lot of people there. But this, the core site, blackriverfossils.org, is still there.
Well, great. So we're, as you know, we're mostly interested in the Edisto River, and I saw a number of your videos where you were pulling up shark teeth, and I think you had a megalodon tooth. And so maybe could you just take a few minutes and tell us about what exactly you do, you know, how you find these things. I didn't even know such things existed in the river.
If you can think about the water coming in from the ocean and then going back out, and then over time the land builds up, right? Well, then the water comes back in and it washes all those fossils back out. And then the water goes back out, and then land builds up. Well, so each time the ocean comes in, and it keeps on eroding more of these fossils out, right, and depositing them together. Well, now, this, you know, this process has been going on for millions of years, and the river, the Edisto River, since we're talking about that, cuts right through the deposit where the ocean put all of those fossils that it eroded and into this formation. And so when the river goes across that formation, it erodes them all out and deposits them all over the bottom of the river. And that's what we're picking up. What you do is you get in a canoe or a kayak and you start going around and looking for places where that formation that I was talking about has eroded. And the telltale sign of that is there's large deposits of gravel. And so you would go and swim along that gravel and pick all the stuff off that's laying there that doesn't look like a rock, which, you know, most of it's rocks, but there's bones and there's teeth and there's also artifacts in there too. So you find lots of stuff. And then more recent things, you know, like bottles and coins. I use a canoe with a trolling motor on it because you can navigate pretty much anywhere you want to go. And I know a lot of people out there with John boats, and that's fine too. But you don't want something that's really big because you can't go when that river is full. You have to go when it's very shallow because the current is just blistering speed, and no amount of strength or being weighted down will be able to hold you in a spot. And when you're looking for fossils, and so not every tooth is a giant megalodon tooth, you know, some of the teeth are very tiny, so you can find them too, but you need to be able to hold your place in the river. And so we really can only go basically when we're in a drought, because other times the current is just too swift to be able to fight against. But as far as gear goes, besides for your boat, you're going to need to have a mask and a snorkel at a minimum at that height, because, you know, some places you can get in there and it's chest deep, but you just got to find the spots like that. But you can go when it's a little bit deeper if you have scuba gear, but scuba gear is a little bit more expensive. And you also have to have a certification to be able to get the tanks filled and also to purchase the gear at a reputable dive shop.
Yeah, and I do want to throw in here, because I'm a diver as well, don't want to go out and get in the river with scuba gear on unless you have the skills and the experience and the certification.
That is a fact. I got an email from a gentleman less than a month ago who told me he nearly died in that river because it was his first time doing a river dive, and he was not prepared for the current. You know, you look at it from the top, you're like, oh, I can do that. But when your whole body is immersed in it and you are completely at its, you know, will, you don't really have any say in the matter. Then if you don't know exactly what you're doing, you don't have any business being down there.
Okay, so now that we've scared everybody half to death, tell me about the best stuff you find.
Okay, best stuff you find. Yeah, the good stuff. Okay, big shark teeth, megalodon teeth, ancestors of megalodon teeth, because you know they and sharks evolved too, just like everything else, and so there were older species that were that came before megalodon, but they were big also. They're called angustidons. Then there's other species of sharks. There's makos and great whites and threshers and snaggletooth sharks and tiger sharks and sand tiger sharks, lemon sharks, bull sharks. I mean, all of these different shark species are down there. And you find ice age fossils. You find, you know, mammoth teeth. You find, you know, bones of horses, horse teeth, camel teeth, bison. Just about anything you can possibly think of that lived, you know, in the area can be found in that river. It really just gets you going. You know, you find something and you want to find something else. It does not take long to get hooked, let me tell you.
You're saying that the key indicator is deposits of gravel. Can you maybe explain that? Why is that? And what? How do you recognize those places, and where do you specifically go on the Edisto to do this?
The gravel is there just because it was part of a deposit. You know, the heavy stuff sinks to the bottom, and there's pretty much rocks everywhere. And so the shark teeth, they're heavy, they're rocks, they're fossilized, and so they all get grouped together with the gravel. And, you know, gravel's smooth, like the round river stones, and some of it's real, you know, conglomerate looking, and some big pieces, some little pea gravel. You know, it's different in different places, but the consistent thing is it's just rocks. You know, rocks get sorted out with other rocks. So if you want to find a rock, you look where there's lots of rocks. And since sharks eat the rocks, that's where you look.
So really, you're not looking for the fossils where the fossils were created. You're looking for the fossils where the flow of the river has deposited them. So you're sort of looking downstream of obstacles where gravel can accumulate without a bunch of sand in it. Is that right?
That's right. That's what you do. I mean, it's just like any kind of stream where, you know, the water flows and it deposits things. So normal places are around bends because it's, you know, the gravel will go on a straightaway just rolling down a river. But when it hits a bend, that's an obstacle, and so it'll pile up in spots. And so that's where we are usually trying to look. But that's also where there's a bunch of trees, and trees are hazards underwater because you could get pinned under them. And, you know, that's where snakes and alligators like to hang out. So it's a mixed bag.
Kim, can you tell us a little about how you got into this? Are you like a geologist? Are you trained in this kind of thing, or just a hobbyist? How'd you get into it, and how did that grow into what you got going on now?
Well, I'll start by saying it's a hobby, and it started when I was a little kid. I was 4 years old, and I've always lived here, and so my dad stopped on the side of the road because they had a bunch of sand just laying on the side of the road. Just, you know, thrown in a ditch, and he shoveled the sand up and brought it home in buckets and made a sandbox for me and my brother. Well, there were little teeth in it, and I found them while I was out there playing with my mom's spaghetti strainer in the sand. I was finding teeth, and I would come and show him, like, hey, look at these. And he's like, well, let's go back and look and see where I got that dirt. And there were more teeth there. And so then, you know, he'd hear from people, friends, relatives and stuff, other places that they'd found teeth. And so he used to take us, my brother and me, around when we were little kids, looking for it. And then, you know, I got older and I was able to, you know, figure out, well, why did those teeth get there and where did they come from? And then I was able to expand my collecting after, you know, learning that stuff and learning to scuba dive. And, you know, there are other places to find teeth too. You can find them in ditches and excavation sites and quarries. You know, the river is just a place where water is eroding them out. So it's a good place to go find them.
And with that, we come to the end of another episode of the Edisto TV podcast. This has been episode number 3. And as we get ready to go, I guess we can go ahead and reveal, Tom, that we are recording this on Monday, June the 9th. And tomorrow morning, June 10th, we are going to try to paddle down from the State Park boat ramp to the Keetle Bridge ramp and see how that goes, in anticipation that some folks might want to paddle that for the Blackwater event coming up on the weekend of the 21st. So if we're not back next week with another edition of the Edisto River Podcast, somebody come find us. We're on the banks of the river.
That's right. Please.
All right, Tom. Thank you very much. We'll see you next week.
Thanks for listening to Episode 3 of the Edisto TV Podcast, produced by Edisto TV, connecting the Blackwater region.